No, that's fine. I'm happy to. It's kind of appropriate.
Hi, I'm Dr. Maggie Smith with Chiropractic First. I'm here today with my friend and leadership consultant and yoga teacher, Allie Niederkorn. Allie, thanks for coming by to have this conversation.
Thanks for having me.
So we're here today to talk about my recent article in the Lumen magazine, Pain into Presence.
Yes, which I found extremely compelling and helpful and thought-provoking. So I look forward to asking you some questions about it.
Wonderful. I think it's going to be a good conversation.
The article left me wondering, what happened to Jennifer?
Yes.
So what's helping her? Is she getting better in some way?
One of the things that she has committed to is a more consistent chiropractic routine, right? So she's coming in much more regularly, which is helping a lot. Although the thing is, you never know until she has this acute pain, right? And sometimes it only happens every 6 months or every year. So, you know, really the key for her and for everyone is consistency. Whether it's getting adjusted, which I think is incredibly important, or a continuous yoga practice, like even when it seems like you're past the problem, even when it seems like the problem's gone and everything's fine and you can move on with your life, you stay consistent, you stay with it. You know,
right.
She needs to keep getting adjusted. People need to stay in their practices.
Yeah. Well, for those of us who practice yoga, we know that if you stop practicing, you wind up coming back to the mat going, oh, wow, there's a lot here that I became unaware of. And now, you know, it feels like a sense that you need to kind of work through it in a more consistent way to get back to a place where things feel in line, things feel balanced. And it's easy to fall off at that point.
So yeah. I mean, especially when you're treating any of these things like a tool to fix a problem.
Yeah.
Right. So when you're using any of these things, not as a, this is a part of my life and this process is meaningful, but like I'm trying to get to this end.
Yes.
If you're trying to get to a goal, you get to that goal. It's very easy to then say like, well, I don't, you know, because there is always something interesting and rich and deep about it. That's very different than I'm doing this so that thing doesn't come back, you know? And I think that's true both of chiropractic and of yoga, right? Like you can be doing it to prevent something bad from happening, to, you know, because my flexibility is really good and I want to keep it good. Like, sure, but that I don't find that to be a very compelling reason to do anything, right? But to say, because there's this conversation and this relationship I have with my body and I want to know what my body has to say today, that curiosity, right? And that constant, where is this relationship? What does my body have to say? What do I have to say to my body? That ongoing relationship, it is to me much more interesting, more compelling.
And staying present during the mundane, maybe there's not much to hear or something, nothing's changed, but that's just as important as engaging when there's clearly a message happening.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
That's just like a relationship. That was one of the things I was thinking about when I read this article, like a relationship with a person, you don't sort of go offline until they have another problem to share with you.
Yeah, exactly.
You just are there to witness one another.
Yeah, and sometimes that witnessing 6 months later you realize was so pivotal in some way.
Yeah.
Right? That conversation that seemed like nothing and seemed so meaningless, you're just building a foundation for when you need that person in your life. Yeah, there's something really important about just those little, how was your day?
Yeah, just being present.
Yeah, and that being present is important.
This idea that if you're tuned into your joints, that's kind of taking up the message channel for your nervous system, and you can only kind of send one message at a time. So what does tuning into your joints look like? I know what it looks like for me in my yoga practice in terms of knowing where my alignment is, knowing structurally what my pose is doing, but I'm curious, is that what you mean, or is there something more to that?
So this is one of my favorite concepts, and so I'm glad you asked me about this. So your joint position sense is called proprioception, right? So proprioception is that awareness of where your joints and where your body is, right? I don't need to know where my arm is to know that it's closer to my head or down by my side. I can't feel that, but I know it. And so it's this subconscious awareness that you have that's called proprioception. Then the way your nervous system works is that your nerves can only send signals to your brain at certain rates. Different nerves, you know, communicate and process information at different speeds. You cannot get information both about motion in your joints and about pain in the same split second, which is why you think about hockey players who are moving so fast, who get so banged up and seem to keep going, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, people say this a lot, like the pain didn't start until I stopped running.
There's I always think that's the adrenaline.
Yeah, you think it's the adrenaline, and part of it certainly is, but part of it is just that neurologically you're getting all this information about motion, so you're simply not getting the information about pain in the same instant, right? Okay. I mean, you may get the pain a few seconds later, mm-hmm. you know, a few milliseconds later, but just in that moment you don't. So that's kind of the big picture, is that there's this thing called proprioception that I think is so cool. And then there's that fact that your nervous system just cannot communicate about both at the same time. So then when you think about tuning into your joints, in large parts, it's a subconscious process, right? A lot of this is going on, whether you're aware of it or not. And then, but you also can certainly intentionally tune in, right? And be aware of, you know, I think at that point, a lot of times you're really being more aware of pressure. This, when you think about tuning into your joints, at least when I think about it, I think what I'm actually more aware of is I feel this pressure on the outside of my knee versus the inside of my knee. I feel these muscles contracting and these are, these are feeling like they're being stretched and these are feeling compressed. Do you feel like when you think about what you mean by tune in, is that?
So it sounds like you're talking about sensation.
Yeah.
Like what types of sensation might you feel around a joint?
Yeah. Like when you use the phrase, I'm tuning into my joints, yes. I'm like trying to dig down to like, what do you actually mean? Like, what are you tuning into?
Sure. So in my yoga practice, it's largely, I think the pressure piece is key. So what types, how is the joint being engaged? Is there a lot of weight bearing on that joint or not? Is it sort of in line with another joint or not? Is there any twisting action happening? But those are usually, you usually get those from pressure of some sort.
Like, how do you determine, when you say, is there pressure on that joint?
Yes.
Like, how do you decide that? Like, what does that actually feel like?
Right. Yeah, that's a good question. It's probably something that, like you said, is pretty implicit. We all know it, but when we hear it, but we're not, it's hard to articulate.
Yeah. And that's part of that, like getting curious and just knowing your body better, right? Is like the next time you're in those poses, asking that question of like, well, what do I really mean when I say like, it feels like there's weight on this joint.
At a certain point in the practice, you're doing some sort of body scan where there isn't much pressure, so to speak, on the joints, but you're still drawing your attention to it. Mm-hmm. Then it feels a little bit more like presence with that part of your body and sensing sort of the space in the knee joint and the connection between the, you know, the shin and the thigh or something. So I know there's a lot of benefit for the body to kind of take yourself into focus on particular places, even if nothing's happening there. And then actually asking that question, what is happening here?
Yeah.
Like sometimes there is a message, but we wouldn't have otherwise been tuned into it.
Yeah, or even just what am I really feeling?
Yeah.
Right? Like what do I think is there? What's going on?
Yeah.
Because one of the things that is important to be aware of as far as pain goes is the more awareness your body has of discrete different parts of your body, the less pain you're going to have. There's this map in your brain, right? So your brain has this map of your body. Mm-hmm. When it is a very detailed map with a lot of nuance of this part of my knee is different than this part of my knee, that will, based on the research studies, simply result in less pain.
Interesting.
That the more your body, your brain has an awareness to recognize, you know, my shin versus my knee versus my thigh, the more nuance that your body has, your brain has about that, the
almost
less
like
pain.
On very particularly where that pain might be and not sort of displace it to other places around because it can kind of tune in.
It can tune in, and just simply by the very nature of being able to tune in, it's going to have less pain.
Okay.
It's like a little kid who, as long as they can see their parents, they don't cry and they're fine.
Right?
Like, you know your dad's in the corner, so you know you're safe. But if you can't see your parents, you're going to start crying, not because there's necessarily anything wrong, but just because you don't know what's going on, right? And so your brain does the same thing of creating pain, not necessarily because there's a problem, but simply because it doesn't know, right? Like, it doesn't know where these different parts of your body are. It doesn't have that awareness that in Shavasana you're gaining.
Yeah.
And so simply gaining that awareness will bring down your pain levels because your brain is really soothed by that.
Yeah.
And it says, like, okay, I know what's going on. I know where everything is. Every part of my body is accounted for. If I needed to talk to my knee, I could. So it's fine, right?
There's it's interesting. Settling. I was thinking that maybe the reason that awareness of the body contributed to less pain was because that idea of not resisting.
Yeah.
So sometimes when you bring attention to something, it can reduce your resistance to what's happening out of like lack of ignorance. So I wondered if that was part of what was going on.
I think it may be, right? Okay. I think it's that. And I had someone say to me once, they'd never heard anyone talk about their talk about the body as anthropomorphically as I did. Mm-hmm. She's like, it's like you act like it's a person. And I was like, right, well, it is a person. I think really important tendency to treat our body like a person. And yet sometimes we, you know, like we also don't know, right? Yeah. So we only know what the research has told us this far and then what we have that kind of deep knowing of.
Yeah.
But getting back to the resisting piece, I feel like the issue is that when you're resisting, you're again not getting that information, right? If your child is crying and you leave the room because you can't handle that, your kid is going to keep crying until they see you again, right? So if you say, like, I don't want to deal with this. I'm not going to have the conversation. I'm not going to engage. It does get worse, right? That then as you are not allowing that neural communication, right? When your nervous system and your nerves can't communicate with your brain because your brain is unwilling to take in that information, your body's going to keep yelling, right? Your body has something that it wants to tell you. Your brain has information that it wants to get. If you're stopping that communication from happening, whatever part of you wants this conversation to be happening, even if it's a painful one, is just going to double down, right? Mm-hmm. Like, no, this really is important, right? For whatever reason, your body or your brain has decided to create this pain.
To me, that ties to what's distinct about your practice, which is that you're helping to open up the communication channels, right?
Absolutely.
In terms of what you're doing with patients is you're helping the body have more sort of fluid, open communication holistically, like all around.
Yeah. I often talk about it in terms of mail that comes into your house. Mail comes in, and there are times in my life when the mail does not get immediately read and sorted, right? Like, it just gets thrown on the table, right? And so there are times at the end of the week when my dining room table has far more mail on it than it should. And as a result, I can't eat on that table, right? I can't use that table because there's just all this stuff on it. There's all this stuff. And some of that is junk mail that doesn't matter, that just has to get thrown away. Right? Some of it is bills that are important, uncomfortable things I have to deal with. Sometimes there's checks in there. There's letters from friends. There's really wonderful, beautiful things in that mail. But if it's all just sitting there on the table, I can't use that table, right? The table that is my life in this metaphor, right? And I haven't been able to process all these things that have happened, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of what we're doing in this office is just helping you go through the physical, mental, emotional experiences that is that mail, right? Mm-hmm. Some of it's totally not important. It's just taking up space. We can throw it away and discard it very easily. But you have to open up all the mail and see, right? And so sometimes people come in and we're just helping them let go of old stuff that they don't need, you know, and then we'll come across some really beautiful gem of something really nice, right? And they'll leave the office very happy and very peaceful and very settled. Sometimes they'll leave not all that happy, right? Because we found some bill they weren't expecting. But whatever it is, we're facilitating that communication. And then, in addition to having gone through all that mail and gotten rid of all that stuff, had those conversations with the body, there's then all the space on the table to live your life, right? So as a result of increasing that communication, we're also creating a lot of space, right? So it's both having the conversation, which then creates the space for new conversations.
It sounds a lot like the purpose of holding a pose in yoga is to really discover what it has to offer
and
what it reveals about the body. And then it will often have an impact that's subconscious. And so at the end, we're in Shavasana sort of absorbing all of the impact of each of the different postures that we were in. And each of those helps you to sort of digest your life in a different way.
Yeah. And what I really love about holding those postures, for me at least, is how the experience shifts. Right, that it will be really uncomfortable, and then it will feel really good, and then it will, you know, like that, then it will feel tight in a different place, right? And just be able to watch that movement of I'm not doing anything differently, I'm just being present, and yet there's all this richness of the changes and the dynamic.
Yeah, there's like this after effect, and you can't always explain where that came from, but there's usually some, in my experience, some sort of release.
Yeah.
And that I like that analogy of clearing the mail on the table. It's like, oh, the table's a little more clean.
Yeah.
It's helpful.
And then there's all this new stuff that you can do.
Yeah, and there's good stuff and things that I can just, you know, not pay attention to. And yeah, that's great.
Yeah, yeah. And the way that that process continues to evolve over time is really interesting.
Yeah.
Right? Like even once you're no longer in my office getting adjusted, even once you're done with the yoga class.
Yes.
That conversation continues, right? Your body continues to process and move forward.
I think that's really helpful, though, to think about the body, like, to personify. Mm-hmm. Because if you think about being present and building more of a relationship, it's helpful for us as humans to have a way of relating to that as another person.
Yeah.
Versus some inanimate object.
Yeah.
And it is kind of funny that we don't relate to our bodies. We sometimes relate to them in inanimate ways. Like my arm that just kind of has its function and it's almost more like a machine that we talk about our bodies. But to think of that more as something that does speak, mm-hmm. that you do have dialogue with, and also that you could bring sort of a kind, caring presence to.
Yeah.
What if I relate to my body with the same way that I'd relate to my best friend?
Yeah. It's funny how revolutionary it seems to treat your body like a living being.
Yes.
Right?
Because we are living beings.
What else would it be?
Why aren't we doing that?
And yet that when you treat your body like a person, right, and then are able to extend that compassion and that frustration and that honest relationship of, you know, awareness, right? And mm-hmm. what's going on here? Why is this being that I am so intimately related to and yet somehow think of myself as distinct from sometimes. Why is it doing this?
Mm-hmm.
Right? What's going on? And the more you can befriend it and have that conversation of, okay, what does my arm want me to know? Right? With an awareness that my arm and I are on the same team, right? Yeah. And these experiences that I'm having. Sometimes my arm is just expressing the truth of my life, right? It's just expressing what's going on in my body, in my brain, in my emotional, mental world.
Yeah.
And
like, I'm really stressed today sitting at my desk.
Yeah.
I can tell after 2 hours, my arm is telling me that a lot is going on at work and I haven't moved for 2 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. And yet somehow we think that it's your arm's fault for having an experience that you've created for it.
Yeah.
Right. Like you're the one who sat at, you're the one who decided to sit at your desk all day.
Yeah.
Your arm is just expressing.
Why are my hips so tight?
Right.
Oh, so we turn them into, like, the problem area.
Right. Rather than saying, like, oh, I am the reason my hips are so tight. Right? Like, I... Like...
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because I think what I think about is, so what would I do differently then in order to better that relationship?
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, if I sit all day for work, because that's just the nature of my work, and my hips get really tight, if I'm listening to them, they're just going to kind of be complaining all day or, like, at mm-hmm. least halfway through the day.
Yeah.
So what do I do with that friend, right?
Yeah.
But maybe part of it is to pay attention to them more, which might actually encourage me to get up more often, to stand for part of a phone conversation. So I'm not, you know, so there is like more of a coherence and sort of.
Yeah, I think there, you know, I often talk about healing as a two-stage process,
yeah.
self-awareness and self-correction,
yes.
right? And first you gain the self-awareness and then the self-corrective piece kicks in. And people will often say to me, sort of as you did, like, I don't want this awareness, right? Like, I don't want to know why my body's going to tell me.
Yeah, they're just going to complain.
Because they assume that their bodies are just going to be telling them bad things, right?
Yeah.
And that is almost never actually the case, right? Is that when you actually do start noticing your hips, two things happen. One is you start noticing all the good things, right? That there are plenty of really wonderful experiences that you can have in your body and with your body.
Mm-hmm.
And that self-corrective piece kicks in really fast, right? So maybe it is standing up more. Maybe it is walking around. It may be simply this minor shift of your sacrum, right?
Mm-hmm.
It may be just noticing that you need to, you know, externally rotate your thighs a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as you know in yoga, right?
Yeah.
There are those little tiny minute changes that a gifted teacher can help you make, and they're barely perceptible, and yet they make a huge difference in your pose. Right. And the same thing can be true in your daily life, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of if you just notice your hips, then you can say, like, oh, huh, all I've got to do is this one little tiny thing. I can sit, not all day, but I can sit comfortably for 4 or 5 hours because I'm having this conversation of, okay, all my hips need is just a little bit of attention.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, we often think that there is going to be these huge external changes required when often it's a small internal change, or it's a huge internal change, but the way that looks externally is minor. So I think that fear of having the conversation is really what keeps a lot of people from doing it. Right. Yeah. Like, oh, I'm going to have to quit my job and go move to Africa and give up all my worldly possessions. And it's like, no, all you may have to do is start meditating for 10 minutes in the morning. Yeah. Oftentimes our lives are not asking us for these huge changes that we fear they are. They're just asking to be a part of it, be more engaged.
Yeah. Got a difficult conversation, too, that you might have with a friend or loved one or even a stranger.
Yeah, I mean, that fear of conflict, right,
is even with our bodies.
Yeah. And it's even really sometimes bigger with our bodies, right? Because we've been raised in a world that is very scared of our physical form, right? And so, yeah, I think that the willingness to enter into the conversation without, you know, fear of what's going to happen is not easy at all, right? Which is why I think yoga, chiropractic, this body work, they kind of help ease that process, right? Rather than diving straight into the deep end of, I've had this chronic pain for 10 years and now I have to deal with it. It's like, okay, well, how about we just start with some really easy poses, right? Like there are ways to start that conversation in places that are safer, that are more stable in your body, right? So you wouldn't tell someone who had some really chronic pain to do poses that are going to challenge those, right? You'd say like, okay, we'll get to those, but they're going to be poses that you're going to do a more restorative practice.
Yeah.
Right, just to ease into that conversation.
Right. Right?
And that's absolutely something that we do in chiropractic in this office all the time, right? Is figure out where you're strong, figure out where you've got an interest in changing, a potential to heal, and say, like, let's start there, right? And help your body expand from that place of strength, expand from a place of peace, rather than going always to what's wrong. Sometimes you're not ready to go into what's wrong.
Right.
You have to start by just really being present to what's right. What's good,
where,
you know,
not just pain sensation, but also positive sensation, strong sensation, warm. Yeah.
Like the sandwich technique. They always tell you to practice people, right? You start by saying something good.
That's right. That's good. I like that approach. Are there other body practices than yoga? I mean, I know like Qigong, Tai Chi, are there others that you recommend to clients?
You know, as I was saying to someone last night at that event you and I were at, body work is really an art, right? We like to think of it as a science because that makes most people feel safer. But I often tell my patients, you just find somebody who's good, right? And I don't, frankly, I think the words that we use, you know, chiropractic, acupuncture, Rolfing, Reiki, those all mean certain things. And yet a gifted practitioner and someone who really understands the body is going to be able to facilitate major change in a really safe and really sustainable way, no matter what they do, right? So I tend to not get too hung up on what the techniques are and really just go through a lot of referrals, right? And ask my friends, like, hey, who do you know who's good? I don't really care what they say they do. If what we're doing is true about the body, it's all at the end of the day the same thing. I often talk about it in terms of languages, right? We can say we're speaking French, or we can be speaking Italian, or we can be speaking Russian. That doesn't really matter as long as what we're saying is true and what we're saying connects with the person we're talking to, right? And so there are certainly, as someone who does not speak Russian or Chinese, it doesn't matter how good you are at that language. I can't have that conversation with you, right? So there are body work techniques that aren't for me, right? Because I simply don't, my body doesn't speak that language. Someone else's body may, and then it's perfect for them.
So there are things you can do on your own, like yoga, Tai Chi practice. And then there's also lots of therapies you can seek.
Yeah.
And all of this contributes to good communication, relationship with the body.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it really is, back to that language analogy, it's just about having that conversation, right? And so if you have a language that you speak fluently with your body, whatever that is, then it doesn't matter as much what language it is, right? Whether it's Tai Chi or whether it's chiropractic. If you're coming at healing from a place of not really having a language, right? And not having a way to communicate with your body, then you have to learn it. And you really can't learn a healing language in isolation, I don't think, right? So if you're coming at this with saying, like, I really need to dig deeper than I feel like I can with the skills that I have, then I think it's really important to start seeing a chiropractor, start seeing an acupuncturist, start, you know, doing some really one-on-one yoga classes, right? Mm-hmm. Find someone who can teach you the language because you may not know it well enough or deep enough to be able to take that next step.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, even people who are fluent in English who want to write a book or want to do a TED Talk are going to find someone who can help them have that conversation.
Yeah. In the article, we were talking about, you're referencing, do not rush in immediately to fix the problem or create symmetry in the pose. Notice what your body's doing and then ask your body what it wants to know. It wants you to know. It may be trying to get your attention about something seemingly unrelated. So what my comment was is, like, this can be sort of daunting at times, because what if I don't know how to interpret the message that it's giving me?
Yeah.
And then I'm, like, left wondering, oh my gosh, is this something to be serious about?
Yeah.
Is this sort of, like, you know, just fine and part of the normal conversation right now? It's kind of like someone giving you multiple messages, and some of them sound like they could be grave or really serious, and you're not quite sure how to process or make sense of those. What I have found, because some of what, in my experience, the body speaks both explicitly and implicitly. Mm-hmm. So explicitly would be like a very specific sensation. Implicitly is sometimes, well, my mood has shifted in some way, or the sense of just being relaxed versus tense overall has shifted. And I feel like sometimes I can't put that into words or name exactly where that's coming from. So what I've learned over time is sometimes when I do feel anxious or tense, I don't need to take it so seriously.
Absolutely.
Because oftentimes if I trust my body and kind of the larger conversation, what's important will surface when it needs to.
Yeah.
And there's such a great sort of curve to things where you'll have like very strong, wonderful sensations and very strong not so wonderful sensations and everything in between. And that's just part of our experience, right? So almost like not to take things too seriously until I have a better sense of what the whole is. And so I've just like sort of learned to trust that my body often works stuff out.
Yeah.
If I'm kind of compassionate and gentle and patient.
Yeah.
And if it is some sort of acute pain or something that really feels off, it's like, okay, maybe there's something to do here, but giving it space has often been, in my experience, like the biggest lesson.
Yeah.
And so there's a fundamental trust to that, that
yeah.
when I first started having more conversation with my body, I didn't have.
Yeah.
I was like, oh dear, I need to fix this.
Yeah.
I mean, that really was my conclusion. So anyway, I don't know if there's something.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's absolutely right. There's that balance of getting unattached and holding the space,
mm-hmm.
right? That sometimes your friends or your body just needs you to listen,
mm-hmm.
right? They don't need you to fix it. They just need mm-hmm. to say it. And your body can then do its thing and work through it on its own, right? We've all had those times when we just needed to vent,
mm-hmm.
right? And then just through telling someone something, you figure out on your own what you need to do.
Yeah.
So your body certainly does that too. But at first it is hard, right? And that's why it is so important to have healers guiding you through the process, right? So that we can say, you know, this, it's uncomfortable, but you're going to be okay in a couple days.
Mm-hmm.
Or, yeah, I feel exactly what you're feeling. And this time we actually do need to do something differently. Or let's get that checked out by somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, having someone to witness the process and to be able to hold the space for you to have this conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as I said to you yesterday, facilitation is much harder than it looks and much more important, right?
Yes.
Having someone to facilitate that conversation. We've all been in meetings where no one facilitated the group and it did not go well,
yes.
right? That that while facilitation can look like a very effortless thing when it's done by a really gifted master, there's a lot to it,
yeah.
right? And so sometimes you can have those, sometimes you don't need someone to facilitate,
mm-hmm.
but especially if the group is newer, right? Especially if you are newer to your body, it's really helpful to have someone facilitate that relationship
mm-hmm.
and that conversation.
Mm-hmm. That's great. That's helpful.
Yeah.
And then the trust sort of builds over time.
Yeah. Well, because then you develop a relationship,
yes.
right? And over time, you know your body well enough to know, like, oh, this is that thing it does. This, you know, oh, that's just my body.
Yeah.
Versus like, oh, wait, this is real and this is something to pay attention to,
yeah.
right? The way you learn that with anyone in your life over time, what to take seriously and what not. And you don't know at first. So you need someone to help facilitate that when it's newer.
Yeah.
Or when it's, you know, whether the your whole relationship with your body is new or whether you're just digging into a deeper light layer.
Right.
Getting into some older stuff that you don't know as much about.
Okay. Yeah, that's helpful. Oh, yeah, I thought that was actually really interesting. So you said when you have pain, the muscles in that area turn off. And I was like, oh, I wonder what she means by turn off. Like, what really...
Yeah. So it's actually a pretty interesting concept that I wrote an article for the Elephant Journal about in the fall. When it's easiest to think about in terms of if you have a herniated disc, mm-hmm. right? So the way your body works is you have these bones in your back, and in between them are these, like, little pillows of fluid. Mm-hmm. And they're really squishy. And so if one of them gets injured, you don't want the muscles right around there to be able to contract, right? Because if they contract on this squishy injured thing, it's going to get more injured. You don't want to put pressure on a wound.
Yeah.
And with an awareness that you don't want to put pressure on something that could then get mm-hmm. more injured, your body actually has those muscles stop being able to contract.
Oh.
So your brain turns off those muscles and says, you guys are not allowed to contract right now. Right. And so you muscles that are very close to this injury are going to not be able to engage, because if you engage, you could cause more damage.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have these superficial muscles, these other bigger muscles, you know, that are further away from the injury. Those are going to have to work a little bit harder right now. So you guys don't do anything. Just sit there quietly. Someone else is going to handle this problem for now.
Right.
Which is a really good short-term strategy and a really bad long-term strategy.
Get used to that, then
right.
You're not turning on the right muscles once it's healed.
Exactly. Right. And then once it's healed, oftentimes you do have to actually go back and retrain those smaller muscles to get them to re-engage.
Yeah.
And a lot of repeat injuries, right? The reason people get injured in the same spot over and over again, research is suggesting that it's because they never turn those muscles back on, and then injury happens because these muscles that were never designed and should not be doing these motions in a long-term way are still helping instead of those muscles closer to the injury site.
That's really interesting.
So it is a really important reason to get really good chiropractic care or to get physical therapy or to have a yoga therapist who can really help make sure you're activating the correct muscles.
Yes.
Because you got to turn those muscles back on. Sometimes your brain does it on its own, but oftentimes it doesn't.
That actually speaks to a lot of why you would want to have, anytime you do have a joint injury, mm-hmm. or I would assume other types of injury as well, to have some therapeutic care afterwards, even if it's not prescribed by a physician doing physical therapy,
right.
That it would still be helpful because you're still kind of restabilizing the workload in the body.
Because even if you feel fine,
yes.
right, the pain, this is not an issue of pain.
Yeah.
And you may either not be doing anything challenging or nuanced enough with your body that you notice that you're not using the right muscles.
Yeah.
But you're probably not using the right muscles.
Yeah, so it's still sort of an inefficient system.
Yeah.
Because you don't have all the right pieces engaged in the right ways.
Exactly.
So you still have this overcompensating, and that can be. No, that makes sense. So at the end, I love your statement. It comes from awareness of your body. It comes with deep presence and engagement. That's where the magic happens. And I just thought, you know, sort of as we started the conversation, deep presence and engagement is where the magic happens in any relationship. So
yeah.
I just think that's a beautiful thing to have that analogy.
You. Yeah, and I think it's just why I wrote the article.
Yes.
And I think that's so important to be aware of. And back to your point about the fear and the conflict, it's scary, right? Any sort of deep engagement can be scary at times, right? And intimacy is not for the faint of heart, right?
But yes, and developing trust over time.
Yeah.
That takes, like, there's time that's involved in that, and it takes continuing to show up even when it's difficult or I don't really want to do this today.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for coming by.